Nuketown Radioactive number 26 for Monday, February 20th, 2006. Folks, welcome to Radioactive number 26. This is Ken Newquist, your host, and it's been a pretty long time since the last Radioactive came out. I was starting to get some slack from listeners about it, so here you go. Just proving that if you nag me enough, yes, I will release another podcast. There's been an awful lot that's actually been going on, which is why it's taking me so long to get another one out. I've continued to work on the Nuketown beta, and it's going pretty well. We've got 6 volunteers logged in and exploring the site, and have already started to find problems, particularly with the registration process. More volunteers are welcome. If you're interested, email me at nuketown@gmail.com. Now, as far as the recording of this podcast goes, I'm actually going back to the way I started. I'm back in GarageBand. I'm using GarageBand 3 to record this right now. And, let me know what you think about the quality. When I first started with Radioactive, I actually did use GarageBand. I think it was GarageBand 1. And the problem I had with both GarageBand 1 and GarageBand 2 was that you couldn't have songs of different tempos in the podcast. So that was fine if you were just recording like a simple show, but as soon as you tried to incorporate music of any kind, it would screw everything up. So I went over to Audacity, which was rougher around the edges and not as easy to use, but it got the job done and didn't screw with my tempos. now I'm back in GarageBand, and it's pretty cool. They've solved the tempo problem. It's got a specific podcast mode, which is what I'm using right now. And all in all, I gotta say, it's looking really, really good. Overall, the application just feels more solid, a little bit easier to use, a little bit more refined. Just really kind of what you would expect from a 3.0 version of a software. So if you've used GarageBand in the past, but were turned off by some minor things, I would check it out again, because I think it's worth taking another look at. That said, if the podcast sounds a little disjointed, and I sound a little bit out of breath, it's because I'm doing the hyper-multitasking geek dad thing right now. Sue is upstairs getting all of her personal business stuff taken care of for the previous tax year. She does a jewelry business, so she has to go and inventory all of her beads and supplies and all that. So she's been spending the last 2 days doing that, which leaves me on my own with Jordy. So, I'm watching Jordan in the next room while she's playing. I'm doing laundry. I'm recording a podcast. So there may be some awkward pauses as I run to put out some fire or change a load of laundry for the dryer. Let's see. On other Geek Dad notes, Baby Melbourne is kicking. The baby, we can actually feel the baby like this past 2 weeks. Not really, really hard. I mean, Sue's been feeling the baby kick for the last probably month or so. But now it's getting to the point where those of us on the outside can actually feel the baby kick. And what can I say, guys? It's just really, really cool. I mean, it hasn't gotten to the point, obviously, where you can kind of be interactive with the baby, or it's really a profound kick. If I have my hand on Sue's belly, I can feel the baby kick, but it's just kind of like a light tap. Whereas, later on, it's a lot more pronounced, and you can see the actual, ripples and such as the baby does its thing. And, of course, no real big advances on the name front. Baby Melbourne's just the nickname for the baby. Every once in a while we kind of sit around and we kick around ideas for the baby's name, but we really just haven't come up with anything we really like just yet. So, talking of interruptions, just got off the phone with my mom, who informed me that their landline service isn't working anymore. They can call out, but no one can call them, and that they're thinking about getting solar power for their house. Apparently they went to some trade show and there was somebody who was talking about being able to generate your own electrical power using solar panels on your roof. So, it sounds pretty cool, and my mom being kind of like a proto-geek, that would definitely appeal to her. I have one bit of final Radioactive news, and it is to announce the new Nuketown Radioactive promo. That's right, guys. After months of talking about it, I finally got around to actually editing together my very first Radioactive promo, which I'll be playing shortly. I'll also include a URL to the promo in the show notes, just in case you want to download it and use it in your own shows, or share it with folks, or whatever. So, without further ado, here is the Nuketown Radioactive promo. Here at Nuketown Radioactive, we grow our science fiction the old-fashioned way. Whether it's your pseudo-cyberpunk dystopian future,
there are fields, endless fields, where human beings are no longer born. We are grown.
Or dark mysterious oozes lurking beneath the surface of the Earth.
That is not water. Lifeblood of the Earth.
Or our ongoing experiments into alternative fuels.
This is heavy duty, Doc. This is great. Does it run like on regular unleaded gasoline?
Unfortunately, no. It requires something with a little more kick. Plutonium!
You can rest assured that Nuketown uses only the finest speculative fiction and geek ingredients in our homegrown podcasts. Join us every other Monday for speculative fiction and game reviews, geek commentary, and whatever else we decide to ramble on about.
Listen, we found some beryllium on a nearby planet, and we might be able to get there if we reconfigure the solar matrix in parallel for endothermic propulsion. What do you think?
Nuketown Radioactive, because if it's not glowing, it's not good for you. Check us out at www.nuketown.com/podcast. So, in the last podcast, I spent some time talking about losing my sci-fi and rediscovering it again. Basically, the gist of it was that for the last couple of years, for a variety of reasons, I've been reading a lot of fantasy, and over the last couple of weeks, after reading John Scalzi's Old Man's War, I've been kind of on a science fiction kick. I've been getting back into actually reading various forms of science fiction. I'm continuing to work my way through the hard science fiction renaissance. And I'm starting to line up other books that I might like to read, and to that end, I've gone out and I was looking at some of the various sci-fi publishers' website to get a feel for what's out there, what I might read next. And I was really just kind of amazed by the sorry state of science fiction publishing technology. And what I mean by this is that it doesn't seem to me that science fiction publishers, and I think this actually extends to publishers in general, just don't get technology, which is kind of amazing when you think about it, because, well, science fiction publishers are talking about technology all the time. They're editing it, they're obviously reading it, they're publishing it. So you would think that of all the people on the planet, science fiction publishers would be the ones who would be most likely to embrace different forms of technology when it comes to the internet and publishing their works. But time and again, when I was visiting the various sites, I found that they weren't taking advantage of even the most, well, I shouldn't say the most basic. They've got web pages. But they're not going beyond that. Sometimes they're not even having an email newsletter, which is just kind of astounding. So, for example, I went to Tor's website. Tor is a big science fiction publisher. I think about half the books on my shelf are from Tor. And, you know, they're certainly one of the publishers I think of when I think of science fiction. So I go to their site. What do I find? No email newsletter. No RSS feed. They had one current news item from 2005. The next most current one was from 2004, which just amazes me. It's kind of the thing that, you know, if you don't have the news on your site, maybe because, you know, for whatever reasons, you don't have time to get it up there, that's not an excuse. Get an intern. You know, have the intern write up some press releases. Approve them, because your editor's right, and then get them up on the site. Have your interns interviewing authors. I mean, come on, guys. You need to be getting stuff out there. Get the content, if nothing else. Spectra, another publisher, has an email newsletter, but no RSS feed. And the script to subscribe to the newsletter fails when you visit the site using Safari, the Safari web browser on the Macintosh. And although I subscribed to the newsletter over 2 weeks ago, I haven't actually received anything from them yet. Del Rai has email, but no RSS. However, they do have sample chapters online, which is nice. Analog, which is a science fiction magazine that I've read on and off for the last couple of years, and its sister organization, Asimov's, they have online subscriptions, yay, but no online newsletter, no RSS, and only a smattering of content available on the web. And, you know, I subscribed to them probably about a month ago, and I haven't actually seen anything yet, which, again, is kind of annoying. I was hoping to get a copy of the magazine, and now that I think about it, I have to definitely go through my email and make sure I got that confirmation that the subscription actually worked. Now, in terms of what I think they should be doing, I mean, every website, if you're producing content, needs to have an RSS feed. If you're a publisher, it's just essential because it hooks into so many other things. Now, admittedly, this is a very geeky thing. A lot of people, I think the statistic is something like only like 5% of the web uses RSS feeds. But the 5% who are using RSS feeds are influential. They're your bloggers. They want to be able to have access to this information. And if you're trying to promote your content, how the heck are you, you know, you want to appeal to these people. You want to appeal to these technology leaders, especially if you're publishing science fiction, right? You want to make it as easy as possible for them to get this content. Also, the various aggregation sites that rely on these feeds to pull information in about your website. It's another way of indexing your information. It's another way of crawling your information. So there's just no reason why you wouldn't want to have an RSS feed. And yes, I know, you know, it can be a kind of a pain to edit these manually, but there are services out there that will generate them for you. So it's not really an excuse. There are not a lot of good excuses for not having an RSS feed. Email newsletters. Everyone should have one. Published at least monthly, and I would say bi-weekly if you could manage it. And it should work, obviously, in all browsers. Signing up for it should work in all browsers. And I mean, the kind of stuff that I would like to see on these newsletters is, and this appeals to both publishers and applies to both publishers and to magazines, is, you know, tell me what's coming up, you know? Tell me what's coming up in the next Asimov's. Tell me what's coming up in the next Analog. You know, talk about books you're editing right now for Tor. Give me an idea of what's coming so I can get excited about it. As a writer, I can talk about it on my website, and as a reader, I can say, hey, I cannot wait for this book to come out. The news should always be current, and like I was saying before, if you don't have any current news, make some. Give me interviews with authors and editors, you know, and again, if you can't pay someone, get an intern. I know that, you know, I loved doing that stuff when I was a newspaper intern, because it was great for experience, and, you know, it's just, interns are a great resource, right? Do a podcast or publish a zine. Print is dead. Liven it up by sponsoring a webzine or producing a podcast, even something that's just quarterly. I mean, imagine if Tor or Del Rai or one of these companies had just a little zine that they were publishing like every 3 months or so. Use it to highlight your content. Use it to publish some short stories from your authors to promote interest in them. Think of it less as an advertising tool and more as a promotional tool. It just, you know, I think it's something that you haven't seen a lot of sites do, and I think it would be really useful to have, especially for science fiction publishers. There are a few sites that come close to getting it right. Locus Magazine's website has an RSS feed and an editorial blog, both of which very cool. Sci-fi.com has a newsletter. They also have a podcast, albeit one that is exceedingly difficult to find. I think it takes me at least 3 or 4 clicks from the homepage to actually find a hunt it down. And then the other thing that always drives me nuts about their podcast is that you can't link directly to it, because when you click on the podcast link, it pulls a pop-up up and, you know, ugh. Have a dedicated page for your podcast. But, you know, these are the things that I think would go a long way towards invigorating science fiction publishers. It would certainly appeal to me as, you know, kind of feel like your prototypical geek, you know, the kind of guy who is interested in new technology. We've got a lot of people out there who are into this kind of stuff, but they're just not being reached because, you know, the publishers aren't making the effort. And I think while it's nice to have sites like Locus Mag and SF Site and sci-fi.com, if you're relying exclusively on those sites to get word out, especially about print, guys, you're just collapsing into your own information black hole.
Come closer.
You like that?
Right here. You like that? Beside me.
Beautiful.
I have this incredible need. And the need is for you to experience.
Most People Are DJs. Michael O'Dea's Indie Music and Review Show. Experience it at www.mostpeopleardjs.com.
So, another load of laundry and a dirty diaper later, and we are on to Sites of Note. First one I wanted to talk about was the one I just actually played a promo for, which is Most People Are DJs, which you can't quite tell from the promo, but it's kind of an interesting combination of music, alternative music, and geekiness. It's got a variety of techno, punk, and alternative bands, plus occasional reviews of comic books and other geekiness, as well as a certain not entirely explained obsession with the OC, as in the television show The OC. I've been listening to it a couple of times. It's a good show. I like it just because it plays some music that I wouldn't necessarily listen to, and you know, just kind of mixes things up a bit. You know, it makes for a nice change from my regular suspects. You know, listening to like Roll 2d6 or All Games Considered or whatever. You know, it's nice to have these kind of more musical, less overtly geeky podcast to kind of break up the listening. So I've been on a Lego kick for the last couple of weeks, and knowing that, a couple of readers sent in the following, Cthulhu Lego Rising, or I guess I should pronounce it Cthulego Rising. It was sent in by Fred Parkins, and also mentioned by Yellow Jedi on the beta test site. And it's really cool. I mean, I wish I had this kind of time to put into building Lego stuff. It's a huge Lego diorama featuring tentacled monstrosity, intrepid explorers, zombies, and, of course, Doctor Who, all on this giant tropical island. It was developed by British Lego fan Mark Stafford, according to an article on sci-fi.com. It was done for this big, I can't remember, I think it's a Brickfest? I'm not quite sure. It's this huge Lego convention in Europe held annually, and he built it for that. And I think he built it like about a year ago, and then just recently it got a huge amount of press. I think after he posted it to Brick Shelf. And there would be the obligatory screw-up. so, cool site, definitely check it out. And then finally we have Treasure Tables. This is something I wrote a full review of on Nuketown, so you can check it out there. It's an excellent blog for game masters or anyone trying to understand them. It's got an active forum and frequent posts discussing theories of game mastering and links to various tools for GMs. Very cool site. I found it to be really useful in kind of recharging my gaming batteries, so definitely worth a visit. The links for all of these can be found in the show notes, but real quick, we've got Treasure Tables is at treasuretables.org. Most People Are DJs are at mostpeoplearedjs.libsyn.com. And unfortunately, the Cthulhu Lego Rising one is kind of more lengthy, so if you want to check that out, get the URL from the show notes.
This show is part of the Out of This World Entertainment on the Sci-Fi Podcast Network. TSFPN.com.
Don't you just hate it when you put your clothes in the washing machine and they come out dirtier than when they went in? That's just what happened to me. I just spent the last 15 minutes trying to figure out why my whites came out so gray. So I've been cleaning out the washing machine and just put in a cup of bleach, and hopefully this time around my delicates will appear a bit more white. Anyway, that kind of delayed me from my next segment, which is a book review of Rendezvous with Rama by Arthur C. Clarke. This book was published in 1973. It's 288 pages long. And frankly, when I talk about science fiction I love, this is just a perfect example of it. In the not-too-distant future, Paris is destroyed by an asteroid that collides with the Earth. This prompts the formation of Space Guard, which is an international agency designed to identify and intercept Earth-crossing asteroids and comets. While they are conducting an inventory of what exists in the solar system that might threaten Earth, they discover a particularly large object approaching the solar system at an incredible rate of speed. They immediately dispatch a ship to investigate, and what they find there is your classic mystery wrapped in an enigma. Because it turns out it's not actually an asteroid. It's this huge, manufactured, spinning, cylindrical, artificial world. They dock with this, and because clearly this is of alien make, because no one in our solar system made it. They go inside, and what they find is just this huge, wonderful world, one in which basically it's hollow, and as they descend the staircases into the floor of this thing, the floor is basically the inside of the cylinder, and they discover this huge cylindrical sea that runs around the inside of it. And, you know, I'm just not really doing justice to Arthur C. Clarke's vision. The thing that's always struck me about it, and Ringworld struck me this way as well, is just imagining standing on the floor of Rama, looking up and seeing across this huge expanse the Earth looking down on you, you know, the ground above you. So it's not even so much a cave, because you can see kind of like these fields and such above you. Just, it's an image that has just kind of stayed with me all these years since I've read the book. So you have a group of explorers that are moving through the station, trying to figure out exactly what Rama is, who built it, why they built it. And as they do so, the spacecraft comes ever closer to Earth and to the inner planets, all of which have been settled. As it draws closer to the sun, Rama starts to undergo changes. The cylindrical sea, which they first encountered as this huge frozen block of ice, thaws. And when it thaws, it gives rise to hurricane force winds that just ravage the inside of Rama, forcing the humans to flee. When they come back in, they discover this evolving environment where they suddenly, these biots, these kind of biological robots, have emerged from the sea. They're conducting various repairs around the around Rama. They are basically scurrying around these little, what they call cities, humans end up calling cities, that are scattered around Rama. And all the while, the humans are just trying to figure out what the heck is going on. And they don't necessarily figure that out, which is another thing that's great. You know, there's a lot of mysteries to Rama. There's a lot that we don't understand, but that doesn't stop the humans from going there and trying to figure it out. Trying to understand why, for example, the Ramans were obsessed with threes. Every threes, all the biots have three legs. There's three main staircases that lead down to Rama proper. Just these little mysteries that kind of keep popping up. And the sense of wonder as the scientists and the explorers try and look through the expanse of Rama and just try and understand it. It's a great hard science fiction adventure. And I mean, some might see this as a fault. The characters don't have a huge amount of depth or complexity, but that's okay with me. This is about astronauts doing what astronauts do, exploring, discovering. And while there are some interpersonal conflicts, you know, that's not the emphasis of the story. The emphasis of the story is this wonderful world that they are having this opportunity to explore. The subsequent books in this series, which were written by Arthur C. Clarke and Gentry Lee, tried to add that human angle to it by introducing flaws and all sorts of other motivations to the characters, but really, they never even came close to the original. You know, sometimes, guys, it's just all about the science. So, I personally think that Rendezvous with Rama is a book that should be on every science fiction fan's list. It's something that you must read. It's just a fantastic outing. It will, if you're looking to reignite that science fiction spark, this book will do it for you. So, folks, that'll about do it for Radioactive. Felt good to get back behind the mic again, as it were. You know, things were a little rough around the edges. And stumbled a couple of times, but overall, I thought I did a fairly good job. I'm looking to get things going at a more consistent rate now. I'm looking for every 2 weeks. I think that's the most realistic schedule. I loved doing weekly. It was awesome, but, you know, just don't have that kind of time. Especially as we move towards June and the due date for the baby. The music that you're listening to for the intro and now for the outro is Groove It by Dennis Kitchen, which I found via Podshow Music. There'll be a link to the... Finally, we have online forums at www.newtown.com/forum, which nobody uses, but they're there if you want. And there's also the tsfpn.com forum, and a link to that will be in the show notes. So, folks, once again, it was awesome, and I look forward to talking to you later.